Hello, this is Mrs. English. Today I'm reading from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Odyssey, and we are now beginning Book 7. So long-suffering great Odysseus prayed in that place, but the strength of the mules carried the girl on to the city, and when she had arrived at the glorious house of her father, she stopped in the forecourt. And there her brothers around her came and stood, men like immortal gods. They, from the mule wagon, unyoked the mules and carried the laundry inside, and she went into her chamber. There, an old woman of Epeir, Eurydemisa, the chamber attendant, lighted a fire for her. Oar-swept ships once carried her over from Epeir, and they chose her out as a prize for Alcinous, because he ruled all the Phaeacians, and the people listened as to a god. She had nursed white-armed Nausicaa in the palace. Now she lit her a fire and prepared her a supper indoors. Then Odysseus rose to go to the city. Athena, line 15, with kind thought for Odysseus, drifted a deep mist about him, for fear some one of the great-hearted Phaeacians, meeting him, might speak to him in a sneering way and ask where he came from. But when he was about to enter the lovely city, there the gray-eyed goddess Athena met him, in the likeness of a young girl, a little maid carrying a pitcher, and she came and stood before him, and great Odysseus questioned her. "My child," line 22, "would you not show me the way to the house of a certain man, Alcinous, who is lord over all these people? For I am an unhappy stranger, and I have come here a long way from a distant land, and I know nobody here of the people who keep this city and the fields about it." Then, in turn, the gray-eyed goddess Athena answered him, "Then, my friend and father, I will show you the house that you ask me to show, since the king lives close beside my own stately father." Line 30. "But go on in silence the while I lead the way for you, and do not give any of these people your eye, neither ask them questions, for they do not have very much patience with men from the outlands, nor do they lovingly entertain the man come from elsewhere. They, confident in the speed of their running ships, cross over the great open water, since this is the gift of the Earthshaker to them, whose ships move swift as thought, or as a winged creature." Here, Athena, in the form of a young girl, tells Odysseus not to stare at anybody, not to look at anybody. She'll take him to the castle, since it's right next door to her own father's house. And in line 35, she says, "This is the gift of the Earthshaker to them." This means that these people, the Phaeacians, are dependent on the Earthshaker, who is Poseidon. They are dependent on Poseidon. Odysseus just found out that these people he hopes to get help from are dependent on his worst enemy. Line 37. "So spoke Pallas Athena, and she led the way swiftly, and a man followed behind her, walking in the god's footsteps. But the Phaeacians, famed for seafaring, were not aware of him as he walked along among them through their city, because Athena of the ordered hair, a dread goddess, would not suffer them to, but drifted a magical mist about him, as she cared for him lovingly. But Odysseus now admired their balanced ships and their harbors, the meeting places, these are the agoras, like our town square, the meeting places of the heroes themselves, and the long, lofty walls, line 45, that were joined with palisades, a wonder to look at. But when they came to the king's glorious palace, then it was Pallas Athena, the gray-eyed goddess, who began speaking. "Here, my friend and father, you see the house which you asked me to tell you of. Here you will find the kings, whom the gods love, busy feasting." Line 50. "But you go on in with a spirit that fears nothing. The bold man proves the better for every action in the end, even though he be a stranger coming from elsewhere. First of all, you will find the mistress there in her palace. Arete is the name she is called, and she comes of the same forebears as, in fact, produced the king Alcinous." So Queen Arete and her husband, King Alcinous, are actually related. "First of all, Poseidon, Shaker of the earth, and the fairest in form of women, Periboa, had a son, Nausithous. She was the youngest daughter of great-hearted Eurymedon, who in his time had been king over the high-hearted giants." Line 60. "But he lost his recklessly daring people and himself perished." This is possibly a reference, line 59 and 60, to the battle with the giants. Hard to say. It's the only reference to this in Homer. But he lost his recklessly daring people and himself perished. But Poseidon lay in love with his daughter, and she engendered Nausithous the great-hearted, who was lord over the Phaeacians. Nausithous had children, Alcinous and Rhexenor, but Apollo of the silver bow then struck down Rhexenor, married but without sons in his hall, leaving only the one child, Arete. And Alcinous made her his wife, and gave her such pride of place as no other woman on earth is given of such women as are now alive and keep house for husbands. She was held high in the heart, and still she is so by her beloved children, line 70, by Alcinous himself, and by the people, who look toward her as a god when they see her, and speak in salutation as she walks about in her city, for there is no good intelligence that she herself lacks. And remember, this is still Athena speaking as a young child. She dissolves quarrels, even among men, when she favors them. Line 75. So if she has thoughts in her mind that are friendly to you, then there is hope that you can see your own people and come back to your house with the high roof and to the land of your fathers. So gray-eyed Athena spoke and went away from him across the barren and open water, left lovely Sharia, and came to Marathon and to Athens of the wide ways, and entered the close-built house of Erechtheus. These lines 78, 79, 80, and 81, would be better understood if there was a space at the top and the bottom, if these four lines were set apart from those before and those after, because it is a change of scene. Gray-eyed Athena leaves Phaeacia. She leaves Scheria, and she goes to Marathon and on to Athens and enters the close-built house of Erechtheus. Archaeologically, this is interesting because, of course, our story is set in the time period of the Mycenaean time, this late Bronze Age of Homer. And on the Athenian Acropolis, during the late Bronze Age, there was a palace on the Acropolis at Athens. Later, especially by the 5th century BC, there were no more palaces, there were only temples. The Acropolis was then dedicated to the gods only. And by the 5th century BC, there would be the temple to Erechtheus, the first king of Athens. And so this is either out of context or talking about a palace of Erechtheus. Hard to say. Line 81. But now Odysseus came to the famous house of Alcinous, but the heart pondered much in him as he stood before coming to the bronze threshold. For as from the sun the light goes, or from the moon, such was the glory on the high-roofed house of great-hearted Alcinous. Brazen were the walls run about it in either direction, from the inner room to the door, with a cobalt frieze encircling. This reference to a cobalt frieze in line 87. Imagine or look up pictures of the Minoan frescoes with that bright, bright blue. With a cobalt frieze encircling, and golden were the doors that guarded the close of the palace, and silver were the pillars set in the brazen threshold. And there was a silver lintel above, and a golden handle, and dogs made out of gold and silver were on each side of it, fashioned by Hephaestus in his craftsmanship and cunning, to watch over the palace of great-hearted Alcinous, being themselves immortal, and all their days they are ageless. Line 95. And within, thrones were backed against the wall on both sides, all the way from the inner room to the door, with fine spun delicate cloths, the work of women, spread out upon them. There the leaders of the Phaeacians held their sessions, and drank and ate, since they held these forever. And there were young men, line 100, fashioned all of gold, and in their hands holding flaring torches, who stood on the strong compounded bases, and shed a gleam through the house by night, to shine on the feasters. These young men of gold apparently are full size, perhaps, golden candlesticks. They're candlesticks holders, and they are shaped like men, and they're made out of gold. Odysseus is admiring this incredible palace of Alcinous, and of course he paused. He has to consider, will he really just walk right in like the little girl told him to do, because generally a Zenus, a guest, is going to knock at the door and be announced, and he has been told to go right in, go right to the throne room, and not to approach the king, but go right to the queen. And he's obeying, and he's admiring the features along the way. Line 103. And in his house are 50 serving women, and of these, some grind the apple-colored grain at the turn of the handmill, and there are those who weave the webs and who turn the distaffs, sitting restless as leaves of the top black poplar, and from the claws where it is sieved oozes the limpid olive oil. As much as Phaeacian men are expert beyond all others for driving a fast ship on the open sea, so their women, line 110, are skilled in weaving and dowered with wisdom bestowed by Athena, to be expert in beautiful work, to have good character. On the outside of the courtyard, next the doors, is his orchard, a great one, four land measures, with a fence driven all around it, and there is the place where his fruit trees are grown, tall and flourishing, pear trees and pomegranate trees and apple trees with their shining fruit and the sweet fig trees and the flourishing olive. Never is the fruit spoiled on these, never does it give out, neither in winter time nor summer, but always the west wind blowing on the fruits brings some to ripeness while he starts others. In other words, this orchard is incredible. This orchard, the fruit doesn't spoil, it never gives out, and they flourish all year. This is quite the exceptional garden or orchard. Line 120. Pear matures on pear in that place, apple upon apple, grape cluster on grape cluster, fig upon fig. There also he has a vineyard planted that gives abundant produce, some of it a warm area on level ground where the grapes are left to dry in the sun. But elsewhere they are gathering others and trampling out yet others, and in front of these are unripe grapes that have cast off their bloom while others are darkening. And there at the bottom strip of the field are growing orderly rows of greens, all kinds, and these are lush through the seasons. And there two springs distribute water, one through all the garden space, and one on the other side jets out by the courtyard door and the lofty house, where townspeople come for their water. Such are the glorious gifts of the gods at the house of Alcinous. And there long-suffering great Odysseus stopped still and admired it. But when his mind was done with all admiration, line 135, lightly he stepped over the threshold and went on into the palace, and there found the leaders of the Phaeacians and men of council pouring libation in cups to sharp-eyed Argiophantes, or Hermes, to whom they always poured the last drink when mindful of bedtime. But now long-suffering great Odysseus went on through the house, wearing still the deep mist that Athena had drifted about him, until he came to Arete and to the king Alcinous. Odysseus clasped Arete's knees in his arms, and at that time the magical and surrounding mist was drifted from him, and all fell silent through the house when they saw the man there, and they wondered, line 145, looking on him, and Odysseus made his entreaty. Arete, daughter of godlike Rhexenor, after much hardship I have come to your knees as a suppliant, and to your husband, and to these feasters, on whom may the gods bestow prosperity in their own lives, and grant to each to leave to his children his property in his house and the rights the people have given him. But for me, urge that conveyance be given quickly to my country, since long now far from my people I suffer hardships. So he spoke, and sat down beside the hearth in the ashes next to the fire, while all of them stayed stricken to silence. Line 155. But at long last the aged hero Echeneus spoke forth. He was the most advanced in age of all the Phaeacians, and surpassed all in words, knowing many things from long time past. He, in kind intention now, spoke forth and addressed them. Alcinous, this is not the better way, nor is it fitting that the stranger should sit on the ground beside the hearth in the ashes. These others are holding back because they await your order. But come, raise the stranger up and seat him on a silver-studded chair, and tell your heralds to mix in more wine for us, so we can pour a libation to Zeus, who delights in the thunder, as he goes together with suppliants whose rites are sacred. And let the housekeeper, from her stores, give the stranger a supper. So this old man is breaking the shock and saying, here is a Zenus, here is a guest, a stranger, let's do the right thing. But when Alcinous of the hallowed strength had heard this, he took by the hand the wise and much devising Odysseus and raised him up from the fireside and set him in a shining chair, displacing for this powerful Laodamas, his son. And so King Alcinous made his own son Laodamas get up and give his chair to this stranger, who had been sitting next him and who was the one he loved most. A maidservant brought water for him and poured it from a splendid and golden pitcher, holding it above a silver basin for him to wash, and she pulled a polished table before him. Line 175. A grave housekeeper brought in the bread and served it to him, adding many good things to it, generous with her provisions. Then long-suffering great Odysseus ate and drank. After this, Alcinous, the hallowed prince, spoke to his herald. Pontanous, now mix a wine bowl and serve it to all here in the hall, and make a libation to Zeus, who delights in the thunder and who goes together with suppliants, whose rites are sacred. So he spoke, and Pontanous mixed the kindly sweet wine and passed a portion to all, offering a drink in the goblets. Then, when they had made libation and drunk as much as each wanted, Alcinous, line 185, made a public speech for them and spoke thus, "Hear me, leaders of the Phaeacians and men of council, while I speak forth what the heart within my breast urges. Now, having feasted, go home and take your rest, and tomorrow at dawn we shall call the elders in great numbers, and entertain the guest in our halls, and to the immortals accomplish fine sacrifices, and after that we shall think of conveyance, and how our guest, without annoyance or hardship, may come again, conveyed by us, to his own country, in happiness and speed, even though it lies very far off, and on the way between suffer no pain nor evil, until he sets foot on his own country. But there, in the future, he shall endure all that his destiny and the heavy spinners spun for him with the thread at his birth when his mother bore him." These two lines, 197 and 198, are referring to the what will later be called the Three Fates. And so here the spinner would be Clothis, who wove the thread. Line 199. "But if he is one of the immortals come down from heaven, then this is a new kind of thing the gods are devising." This is line 200. And of course, one of the reasons that they entertain a guest royally is just in case it is a god come down to visit you in disguise. You want to practice proper xenia. Line 201. "For always in time past the gods have shown themselves clearly to us, when we render them glorious grand sacrifices, and they sit beside us and feast with us in the place where we do. Or if one comes alone and encounters us as a wayfarer, then they make no concealment, as we are very close to them, as are the Cyclops and the savage tribes of the giants. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, "Alcinous, let something else be in your mind. I am not in any way like the immortals who hold wide heaven, neither in build nor statue, but only to men who are mortal. Whoever it is of people you know who wear the greatest burden of misery, such are the ones whom I would equal for pain endured." Okay, think of the most miserable person you know. Well, that's just like me. "And I could tell of still more troubles that are all mine, and by the will of the gods I suffered." Line 215. "But leave me now to eat my dinner, for all my sorrow, for there is no other thing so shameless as to be set over the belly. But she rather uses constraint and makes me think of her, even when sadly worn, when in my heart I have sorrow, as now I have sorrow in my heart." Okay, the belly wants to be fed even when you're sorrowing. "Yet still forever she tells me to eat and drink and forces me to forgetfulness of all I have suffered. And still she is urgent that I must fill her. But you, when dawn tomorrow shows, see that you make speed to set unhappy me once more on my own land, even when I have much suffered, and let life leave me when I have once more seen my property, my serving people, and my great high-roofed house." So he just wants to get home and doesn't even mind if he dies right after. Line 226. "So he spoke, and they all approved his word, and encouraged convoy for the stranger, for what he said was fair and orderly. But when they had made libation and drunk, each as much as his heart desired, they went away each to his house to rest. And now he, the great Odysseus, remained still in the palace. And along with him were Arete and the godlike Alcinous, who sat by him, and the servants cleared away the dinner things. Now it was white-armed Arete who began their discourse, for she recognized the mantle and tunic when she saw them, splendid clothes which she herself had made with her serving women. Remember, he borrowed this from Nasica, he borrowed clothing, and the queen recognizes these, but she waits until they are alone, the three of them, to discuss this. Now she spoke aloud to him and addressed him in winged words. Stranger and friend, I myself first have a question to ask you. What man are you, and whence, and who was it gave you this clothing? Did you not say that you came here ranging over the water? Line 240. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered her, It is a hard thing, O queen, to tell you without intermission all my troubles, since the gods of the sky have given me many, but this now I will tell you in answer to the question you asked me. There is an island, O Agagia. It lies in the water far off. There the daughter of Atlas, subtle Calypso, lives with ordered hair, a dread goddess, and there is no one, neither a god nor mortal person, who keeps her company. I was unhappy. It was unhappy I alone, whom my destiny brought there to her hearth, when Zeus, with a gathered cast of the shining lightning, shattered my fast ship midway on the wine-blue water. There all the rest of my excellent companions perished, but I, catching in my arms the keel of the oar-swept vessel, was carried for 9 days, and on the 10th, in the black night, the gods brought me to the island Agigia, where Calypso lives, with ordered hair, a dread goddess. And she received me, and loved me excessively, and cared for me, and she promised to make me an immortal, and all my days to be ageless. But never so could she win over the heart within me. There 7 years I remained fast, but forever was drenching with tears that clothing, immortal stuff, Calypso had given. But when, in the turning of time, the 8th year had befallen me, she herself told me to go, and urged me to do it, whether by a message from Zeus, or whether her own mind turned within her, and she sent me on my way on a jointed raft, and gave me much bread and sweet wine, and put immortal clothing upon me, and sent a following wind to carry me warm and easy. 17 days I sailed, making my way over the water, and on the 18th day, there showed the shadowy mountains of your own country, and the dear heart was happy within me. Line 270. But I was unlucky, and had much misery left to live with still, what was driven upon me by the earth-shaker, Poseidon, who hampered me from my way, letting loose the winds upon me, and stirred up an unspeakable sea. Nor did the surf swell let me sail along my raft, though groaning constantly. For now the storm wind scattered it far and wide, and I now made my way across the great gulf by swimming, until the wind and the water carried me and drove me to your shore. But there, had I tried to set foot on the land, the rough wave would have dashed me against tall rocks in that place that was cheerless. So I backed away and swam again, until I came to a river, and this at last seemed to me to be the best place, being bare of rocks, and there was even shelter from the wind there. I came out and dropped, nursing a hold on life, and immortal night came on. I went out and away from the sky-fallen river, and went to sleep there among the bushes, piled in a covering of leaves, and the god drifted an infinite sleep about me. And there among the leaves, my heart exhausted with sorrow, I slept night long, and into the dawn, and on to the noonday, and the sun was losing its light, and then the sweet sleep released me. Line 290. Then I was aware of your daughter's attendant women playing on the beach, and she, looking like the goddesses, went there among them. I supplicated her, nor did she fail of the right decision. It was as you could never have hoped for a young person so confronted to act, for always the young people are careless. And so Odysseus is telling the queen, Wow, your daughter, you just would be so proud of her the way she acted, because young people today, you know, are so careless. Your daughter's not like that. Also, line 295, she gave me food and plenty to eat. She gave me gleaming wine and a bath in the river. She also gave me this clothing. Sorrowful as I am, all this is true, I have told you. Then in turn Alcinous spoke to him and answered, My friend, here is one proper thought that my daughter was not aware of when she failed to bring you with your attendants here to our house. It was she to whom you first came as a suppliant. So the king butts in and says, Well, she may have done well, except for this. She didn't bring you in. She should have brought you in here instead of left you out there. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, Hero, do not for my sake find fault with your blameless daughter. She did urge me to follow along with her serving maidens. But I, for embarrassment and dread, was not willing, for fear that something in this might stir your spirit to anger, seeing us. For we who are people upon this earth are jealous in judgment. And here, Odysseus, it takes the credit for what was actually the daughter's idea. Then in turn, Alcinous spoke to him and answered, Stranger, the inward heart in my breast is not of such a kind as to be recklessly angry. Always moderation is better. O Father Zeus, Athena, and Apollo, how I wish that, being the man you are and thinking the way that I do, you could have my daughter and be called my son-in-law, staying here with me. I would dower you with a house and properties if you stayed by your own good will. Against that, no Phaeacian shall detain you. Never may such be to Zeus' father's liking. As for conveyance, so that you may be sure, I appoint it for tomorrow, until which time, giving way to slumber, you may rest, and they will sail in the calm to bring you back to your country and house and whatever else is dear to you, even if this may be much farther away than you boy, which those of our people who have seen it say is the farthest away of all. All that time they carried fair-haired Rhadamanthus on his way to visit Tityus, the son of Gaia. They went there, and without any strain they accomplished the journey, and on the very same day they were back home with us. You yourself will see and know in your mind how my ships are best, and how my men for tossing up sea with the oar blade. So he spoke, and long-suffering great Odysseus was happy. He spoke a word then in prayer, and named him by name, saying, Father Zeus, may Alcinous accomplish everything of which he spoke, and so may he have imperishable glory, imperishable kleos, of course, this is the highest kind of glory a hero could achieve, may he have imperishable glory upon the grain-giving earth, and I come home to my country. These words of Odysseus to the king, telling him in line 332 that the king can have imperishable kleos if he can get Odysseus home. How could he get imperishable kleos from helping Odysseus home? This can only be true if Odysseus is extremely important, if he's an extremely important Trojan War veteran trying to get home, and this king helps him to get home. That is how Alcinous could get imperishable glory. This is the first sign, the first hint to Alcinous that Odysseus gives him that he is someone important. Remember, he has not revealed himself yet. He has not given his name. So now these two were conversing with each other. But Arete, line 335, of the white arms, told her attendant women to make up a bed in the porch's shelter, and to lay upon it fine underbedding of purple and spread blankets above it, and fleecy robes to be an overall covering. The maidservants went forth from the main house, and in their hands held torches. When they had set to work, and presently had a firm bed made, they came and stood beside Odysseus, and with words roused him. Up, stranger, so you can go to rest. Your bed is made for you. So they spoke, and the thought of sleeping was welcome to him. Then long-suffering great Odysseus lay down and slept there, line 345, upon a corded bedstead in the echoing portico, but Alcinous went to bed in the inner room of the high house, and at his side the lady his wife served as bedfellow. And that is the end of Book 7.